Stone and Tile Show is proud to be sponsored by the National Tile Contractors Association. The NTCA is a leading trade association in the tile and stone industry dedicated to professional installation of ceramic tile and natural stone. With more than 1,500 members representing thousands of installers, NTCA works hard to be a strong voice for proper installation and qualified labor. The association invests in a professional staff to provide technical support and assistance and offers free educational seminars and regional training opportunities around the country. To learn more about what the NTCA can offer for you or your business, go to the website www.tile-assn.com. That's www.tile-assn.com. Good evening, folks, and welcome to the Stone and Tile Show. I am your host, Fred Houston, and we've got another exciting show coming up. As a matter of fact, James, who I'm going to introduce here in a minute, we've talked about this a couple of different times, and I think it's a topic that's really important. You know, as an inspector, I do a lot of inspections where we have all these failures, and just most of the time I refer back to this manual that we're going to talk about, and it's not being followed. Now, if you're listening and you're an installer, pay attention. There's a lot of good stuff coming up here. Even if you're a restoration contractor or even a fabricator, some of the tips that you're going to find in this particular manual can be helpful. You'll never know when you're going to run into an issue like this. So let me introduce my good friend, James Medina. You've heard James on a couple of my shows in the past. James is with Noble Seal. I'm going to let him do a brief introduction about what he's doing now. I know he's a traveling man, James, it's your mic. Give us a little introduction about who you are, what you do, and why you're traveling so damn
well. I know, right? My name is James Medina. I'm the Director of Architectural Services for Noble Company. And yes, doing a lot of traveling. Actually, been engaged with talking to many of the architects and contractors out in the field. And it's been busy lately because I don't think the construction field really slowed down. You know, there was a little pause, but in reality, it's been very, very active. So in this process of, my career now going on 30 years in the industry, part of CSI, the Construction Specification Institute, part of our chapter, and also I'm also an allied member of AIA. You know, there's a huge responsibility that you have as far as teaching what is accurately given to us as installers, manufacturers. But also conveying a fair and even way of speaking about it to those ones who are going to be drawing it and specifying it. So it's a huge responsibility that I take very seriously, and I love what I do. In fact, Dean Moylanen, who you know, he'll be joining us soon in the near future. But we're going to, you know, we're out there, and I wrote an entire CEU just on understanding what's in your toolbox, which is the TCNA manual. And this is going to be teaching the architects and the specifiers how to use this manual accurately in a legal way in their builds. So if you don't know how to use it and you're listening in, well, there's going to be ones who are specifying it and knowing how to use it when I'm done. So.
Yeah, and that's actually a good point, because a lot of times I know when I've dealt with architects in the past, architects are what I call, and if there's any architects out there listening, I apologize before I even say this, is what I call copy and paste guys. You know, they go somewhere and they copy and paste things, and that's okay if they're going to the right document.
Correct.
But that's an issue. So let's discuss this. I happen to have right on my desk right now the TCNA handbook for ceramic, glass, stone, and tile installation. And, just a little bit of background here. I remember when this particular manual was probably about 30 pages long.
quarter-ish thick or so, yeah.
Yeah, and it grows every year. And I think it's what? I'm trying to look at the last page. I don't have the 221 in front of me, because I have it on digital. But
you
I
should.
Have it
I gave it to you in our last forensics class.
I know.
Yeah,
I don't know where the hell it is.
Inch and a half. Fantastic. Yeah.
It's almost 500 pages. So, my wife just handed me the 2021 annual book of ASTM standards, which we'll talk a little bit about that later, too.
Yeah,
but anyway, I have no idea.
Yeah, 500 pages. Yeah.
I said I have no idea where I was going with that question. So let's give me a little bit of an overview of why this manual is so important.
So, the smart way of looking at it is every good detail, every good project began with a solid foundation. And what I mean by that is when you look at, the details that we have in the industry, we have to draw from somewhere. We don't always continually draw it from scratch. Now, these were formed, these details that are formed in this manual, are made in a way, in such a way that if you are going back and let's say there's a lawsuit, you can go back and say, well, where did you get that detail? And they can say, well, I got it from detail B412 in the TCNA manual located on page 312. So you have some source of getting back to an actual page. Now, this manual is more than just details. You know, back in the day we used to have we'll probably get into it a little bit more. It's broken out in multiple sections. And this, what we're going to discuss is really going to simplify how an individual will look at this manual and also go to it. But the origin of it is like when a guy would come into a bathroom and wonder, is this substrate ready for me to install on? And he can refer to the manual and he says, well, there's drywall on the wall. What does the TCNA recommend in a shower? Well, I can't install on drywall because the TCNA manual, and he has something, a little bit of backing to go off of it and go back to the homeowner or architect and say, listen, you spec this wrong or you installed this incorrectly. I need an acceptable substrate. So not only is it just for the architect, it's also for the installer very much so to back a change order or a change to a particular drawing if they don't see it correct.
Absolutely. Now, you know, speaking of the breakout of this manual, what I've noticed in the last couple of years, because it's right here on my desk all the time, it's got fingerprints and coffee stains and you name it all over it, is that they added stone. And for the longest time, it was only ceramic tile and porcelain. So now they've added not only stone, but they've also added glass as well. So you guys out there that are listening, we have a lot of stone guys listening to this show. Don't turn the dial, you know, as we used to say in the old days, because all these apply to both stone. So why don't you give everybody a rundown of some of the quick chapters or whatever.
If you guys, and I use this analogy in class when we're teaching it, please, when we look at this book, we jokingly or half jokingly say this is our Bible. You know, this is what we use all the time. This is what where we get our rules and regulations. Right? It's a good book.
Right.
But unfortunately, a lot of people out there, don't let it become like your Bible and get dust on the shelf. You got to use it to understand exactly how good it is. So it's really important that you pull it off the shelf, take a look at it. And the first section of this book, from 1 to page 54, really, if anything, start to read those first 50 pages. I'll tell you that right now. And the reason why, because it breaks down things from qualified installers, like you had mentioned in the onset of your show, you're talking about qualified installers, identifying the finished tile work, joint sizes, washing, light washing on walls, to how much coverage do you have on mortars, behind a tile, substrate requirements, is it good enough? And if it isn't, what do you do? It talks about membranes, the different types of membranes out there, the different types of backer boards, what's acceptable, what's not, grout selections. All of this is in this first section. It goes into natural stone. It goes into glass tile and ceramic tile in just those 50 pages. So you want to digest something, start to digest the first 50 pages.
Yep.
And if that seems like too much, and you say, well, I've been doing this for 20 years, and I just want to know, what did they change? Okay. Take your book and flip over, just go over three pages, two pages, and on the third page, there's a little page here. It's maybe one or two pages. It's called Technical Changes to 2021 TCNA Handbook or 2022. And what it does, it breaks down to all the revisions that have been made and also the additions to this book.
You know, that's a great point.
Like this one had, yes, surface wear resistance section for the ceramic tile. And surface wear resistance and dynamic coefficient. If you remember this whole conversation on glass tile section, that has been added in this book. You're going to say something. I interrupted you. Sorry.
Now, you know, that brings up a good point. This is I run into this all the time, especially with some of the expert witness work I do. And that is, let's take an example, and then I'll ask the question. Let's say I go in and I look at an installation. It doesn't matter what it is, shower, floor, whatever. And one of the questions I ask is, when was this installed? And they tell me it was installed in 2016, for example. Let's take that date. And I go and I do my report. I write my report, and I'm saying, you know, this doesn't hold up to the TCNA manual for 2021. What's wrong with that statement?
Well, the biggest part that's wrong with it is that the information that you're working off of didn't exist when that tile installation happened. So obviously a lawyer would rip you apart and say, you know, how about you turn to the right book? And, you know, nobody wants to be embarrassed that way, but it has happened. You know it has happened. You've seen it happen. You really got to work off of the year. And it's very easy. If you go on the TCNA website, and let's say you're working on a case or you're working on a particular installation that was dated to, I think, what is it? What's the first book? I think it was 95 or let's just say 2009.
Like that, yeah.
I have one on my shelf. It's a 2009, and the 2009 is pretty thin, you know, as far as when you look at it.
Yep.
And you can work off of those laws or those, you know, those things that they had, the parameters that the installer had to work around at that time. And that's really critical whenever you're looking at any case that involves when they're calling out the TCNA manual.
Yeah, that's so let's continue on with, you know, the chapters and or the sections, I should say, in the manual itself. I just wanted to get that question in before we went on. I didn't mean to interrupt you with the that question with the manual dates, but go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. So that's a good point, though. Like, you know, if anything, you when you look at anything, you got to take one bite at a time, right? You don't eat an elephant with one bite, so you got to take it in small bites. You'll notice that the pages from 1 to 53 that I mentioned, those are all that tile first section where you get all that meat. Then you have a colored section in the middle, which is the tile initiative. And in the tile initiative, you're going to notice that in this section, there's going to be NTCA or TCNA bulletins about different changes, certain information, what is a true porcelain, you know, choosing the tile contractor is all in this middle section. The green initiative is also in here where it talks about sustainability and why that's important. So it's in the middle section or somewhat in the middle. Then the whole starting in the back part on page 56, this is where you have all the installation methods. And this goes, and I'm just to give you an idea, it goes from the exterior floors to exterior roof and deck floors, which is over living space or maybe not over living space, balconies. There's all these different details that are done, interior floors. Then it goes from interior floors to interior floors with concrete, interior floors with wood. It goes into the bathroom areas, radiant heated floors. Then it goes up to the walls. And as it goes through the walls and shower receptors, it goes into the ceilings. And so you've got into pools and steam rooms. And then it gets into sound rated floors. And this is a very interesting section because it gives a person an in-depth understanding of what STC means, the IIC, where they come up with these ratings. After that, you have exterior roof and decks, and then they start going into stone, putting stone and natural stone on the floors. So everything that you look in this book will revert back to some phenomenal details along with an explanation of those details as it goes from recommended use, just like you would do a specification, exterior, environmental exposure, classification, limitations, requirements, materials that you'll be using. The back section of the book after page 430, then you get into EJ171. And EJ171 has to do with expansion joints. That's what stands for. Now, the interesting thing about this is that if you remember in the old book, it was only about three pages in our old manuals. Now this section not only has all the older information, it has additional information and details on all the different types of joints that are out there, expansion joints, isolation expansion joints, construction joints, perimeter joints, contraction joints. Also, it goes into perimeter movement joints and with backer boards, movement joints, and now the new one is EJ171M, because each one will have a letter behind it. M is the new one. I don't know if you saw that one yet, Fred.
Yeah.
M is what something that Noble Company has been warranting for before it's even been put in the book, which is if you have a tile installation with a staggered joint, we will actually, per ANSI 108.01 and ANSI 118.12, now you got me on the fly. I have to think of it very quickly.
Sorry,
ANSI 118.12, I was correct. 12 for high performance would be able to do a soft joint on the top, a control joint that's staggered. So now that's been added in the book. And that kind of segues into a question I think you received about when's the TCNA going to catch up with manufacturers?
Yeah, you want me to read that question because I have it here in front of me.
Sure. Yeah.
When I post an announcement on all the social media sites, and someone wrote in, can I ask what does the TCNA catch up with the manufacturer's products or the building code catch up? So what is manufactured? I'm doing a steam shower, and the OBC, and OBC here stands for the Ontario Building Code, so this guy's in Canada, requires 10 mm poly behind the wall. But as soon as you put a screw or staple, you have punctured the plastic. And he says what he's using, what system he's using. And, so that's his question,
that has multiple layers, just like his wall has multiple layers.
Right.
That question has multiple layers. So to answer the first part, when does the TCNA catch up with, the manufacturers? If you have a TCNA book, and let's say you're the person that asked the question is listening on page 4, you have the TCNA Handbook Committee, and I'm now going to be sitting on for a Noble Company on this committee. And if you look toward the middle, you'll see Membrane Manufacturers Committee, okay? Porcelain Tile Manufacturers Subcommittee. Quarry Tile Manufacturers Subcommittee. Glass Tile Manufacturers Subcommittee. These manufacturers are part of this handbook. They're very involved. They're very knowledgeable. But you have to understand, with all these subcommittees and all these individuals, you have to be fair and unbiased in what you need in the field.
Yep.
So when I say that is, I could sit there and say, oh, well, all membranes have to meet this standard. Well, that's not very fair because there's multiple different types of membrane. What if a manufacturer makes a liquid membrane and doesn't make a sheet membrane? To say that it all has to be X amount of thickness, no. The manufacturer is going to test it independently. It's going to come to the board, and we have to find an agreeable That's why they have these subcommittees, an agreeable way of installing it in this manner. So the manufacturers are very involved, to answer the first portion of the question, is very involved with the development of the TCNA handbook. You may have a question that you feel is before they have had it written. So the question is, what should you do? You say, right. Well, I want to use it for this, and I don't understand this. Your best practice is to contact the manufacturer that you're using.
Yep.
So he had mentioned Laticrete, right? Or what were they saying?
Yeah.
They were using he said
he was using Laticrete. I can tell you exactly what he said. Laticrete, yeah, he's using a Laticrete system. That's all he says. Complete with a vapor.
Okay.
It is vapor sealed on the outside where it counts is what he says, yeah.
Right. So it could be anything from a 9235 to a hydroband. He's right. So when you're looking at the whole system, Laticrete itself is the manufacturer who will ultimately warranty that job, not the TCNA handbook. The TCNA handbook is guidelines for you to follow, okay?
Right.
You can't fall back on it. You've got to go and ask the manufacturer. The manufacturer reaching out to Laticrete's a very knowledgeable, great manufacturing company that makes phenomenal thin sets, grouts, epoxies. I mean, I've used their epoxies for years. Magnificent, okay? So if he is using or she is using that particular waterproofing membrane in there, and he feels that this building code says that it's an interpretation of a code, as you know, as you get into it,
yep.
That this 10 mil product is used behind. Well, does the code say that there's anything on the face of that board or require anything on the face of the board? If it doesn't, that means that they were dependent on that 10 mil poly behind it to be the waterproofing membrane, which means Canada hasn't changed their code since the 80s, right?
Right, right.
So, you know, it's no fault. At least they have 10 mil poly, you know, to put in their code. But what you want to do, what you want to make sure is that you get the manufacturer that you're using to back what you're trying to say. And, you know, Laticrete can simply write a letter saying by the use of using this particular product, it comes down to permeation rates. So if their permeation rate is so low, even lower than the vapor barrier that you're putting behind it, because that's exactly what it is, that 10 mil poly is a vapor barrier.
Right.
It has a lower perm rate than the vapor barrier. Why are you putting that behind there?
Yep.
What's the use of putting it behind there if what you're putting in front has a lower perm rate? So that's basically how your train of thought would go. Start with the manufacturer, ask them if they've had other installations in the area, if it's very necessary for that, or is an interpretation of the code.
Let's look at that a little bit more. And what I want to delve into, and this gets a little bit deeper, but something I run into quite often, actually, and that is, you know, if we go in and we look at an installation, And you may have answered this already, but I'm going to put it this way so it's more understandable for me anyway. you go in, you look at a particular installation, and how should I word this? Let me
Good
put
to
it
me.
This,
you can
this,
be.
But, yeah, let me put it this way. Do you rely? I mean, I think you've said this. If I look at the NTCNA manual, and it says one thing, but the manufacturer says something different, and this comes up all the time in court cases, which do you follow?
Uh-huh. Ah, so you're asking who supersedes who?
Exactly.
it's exact. Well, you know, it's very simple. I alluded to it. Who pays the bill? Like who's holding the legal responsibility of that warranty? Now,
right.
When I look at an install, and if it's a failure, and let's say they installed it, I'm going to pull one out here that we're familiar with. Hold on a sec. Let me see.
And while you're doing that, let me give the phone number out here. If anybody wants to call in with a comment or a question, The phone number is 323-870-3968. That's 323-870-3968. Obviously, if you're listening live, if you're listening to the podcast, no one's going to answer. But anyway, feel free to call in.
Yeah. So on the F-101, you know, Tile 101, this is on-ground, concrete, bonded mortar bed, ceramic tile, or glass tile. Okay, so if I come up to this installation and this particular installation has a membrane on top of this mortar bed, the bonded mortar bed below, all right? My first thought, if I see the failure, what is the failure? What happened? Was there a crack that occurred on the top? Was it an issue of it tenting? Because you'll see people that's, you know, you and Fred, I know you've seen it. They come in, this section of my floor is all hollow. It's popped up. It's tented up. And you say, okay. And they go, this manufacturer I used was, you know, Noble Seal underneath. Okay, I'm going to put us on blast because we've never had it happen, but I'm safe, so I didn't feel like anybody else is attacking, right?
Right.
So
there you go.
You look at it, and so if I'm the inspector, I'm forced to go. First, I'm going to look at my perimeter of the entire room because I can guarantee you if I have a tented floor, there's no soft joints anywhere on that floor. You know, note it. Note
yep.
exactly the date it was installed. You're going to note the condition of the floor prior to doing a destructive test. Then, you know, take out that section. But also, you can also call the manufacturer. It doesn't hurt to call the manufacturer because what happens is if they show up on site, they can give you a little insight of, was that the correct membrane that was used in this particular installation? And so as you look at it, always refer back to the manufacturer, and then you have to look and see if it was installed per the TCNA recommendations. Yes, you do have to look at that.
Right.
There was an install I saw, and this guy installed in a shower a floor, and he used mastic.
Oh.
Okay. What? Like, did you even read the side of the bucket where it says do not use in a wet area? A lot of guys will shock you at the level of, I'm trying to be nice, creativity that they'll do with bonding agents.
Really.
But, you know, they never ceased to amaze us at what they'll try to pull off. But there's also, you know, we have one spectrum that where guys will just push the envelope so much that it's bad, but there are ones, and you know it, and you've seen it in Florida, that are phenomenal installers. I mean, absolutely phenomenal installers. But unfortunately, what they do is such a craft that it can't be taken out of a bag. You can't make you can't bag it. You can't bag it. And if you could, that'd be phenomenal. But they have such a knowledge that they can install a 5-foot by 10-foot slab completely flat, totally flat, beautiful. And I think I've seen some of the most phenomenal installers down there, you know, so it's just, you have to know your installers. You have to know when you're looking at a failure. I hope I answered your question as far as looking back and seeing if it's that manufacturer.
Yeah. And I'll add to that one. And you kind of mentioned this before too, and that is you also have to look at codes. Because you have not only, you know, the standard building code, but you also have local codes. And those are the things you need to look at, too. And that's important. If you're, you know, let's look at it from an installer standpoint where, you know, I'm an installer. I go in, I bid on a job. I need to, just like we do when an inspection, we need to go in and do a complete evaluation. We, you know, if it's slab on grade, we look at the slab. Does a slab have cracks in it? And then we can, you know, determine what method we're going to use based on size of the tile, the type of tile, choosing the right setting material. And, you know, you're right. And I love, and you mentioned this also, I love when the guy says, well, I've been doing this for 30 years and I've never had a problem. I love that.
Yet. The next word is yet. or the good one is, well, you've been doing it wrong for 30 years.
Like, exactly.
I had a guy, you and I did this, you did the inspection later on that, the tower in Las Vegas. And
yep.
This guy was blocking all the weep holes to the drains, and he's plopping wet cement around it and then floating off. And I said, what are you doing, man? You're blocking the weep holes. I've been doing this for 20 years, and he's training four helpers to do it wrong. And, you know, of course, my next words were probably not as nice, because I was at a point where I was frustrated because he had his boss standing there listening to exactly what he's saying. And I said, you've been doing it wrong for 25 years. Stop. And he ends up getting pulled off the job completely. So.
You know, I wasn't going to bring this up, but I think this is really good to bring up anyway. You know what I'm going to say. And that is, let's talk about standards. And what I thought about this after I talked with you, and I said, you know, in the TCNA manual, they do refer to standards. They refer to the ANSI standards in a lot of their documentation.
Sure. Yep.
So, and I think that's all I'll say about that.
And you know, ASTM standards. And ASTM standards,
yep.
too.
Absolutely. So, you know, besides having the TCNA manual, I would highly recommend that you also pick up the ANSI manuals as well.
Mm.
And I know when you buy these manuals, they also come, you can also buy them with them. And I happen to have a thick copy of the ASTM standards as well, but that doesn't so much apply to the installer as it would to inspectors like you and I. So, you know, whatever.
What everybody has to really understand, that, you know, to hear these words and acronyms thrown around, ASTM, ANSI, what are they? Who are they? Who are these ones who are making these standards? Well,
right.
This standard is based off a test. That number, ANSI A108.01, it's a test.
Yep.
And so that's where a standard is established, is when you have a test for that particular product or a test for that particular detail. That's why it's so important to say, okay, well, what standard are you building off of? Or if
right.
I have a steam room, what particular ANSI standard should I be building to? If I'm installing on a post-tension slab, I had this one come up recently, and an installer says to our technical department, I cannot use your product because I'm installing a natural stone over a post-tension slab. Have you heard of this one?
Yep.
Okay. So
yep.
he says, well, you know, the TCNA manual. He pulls out his TCNA manual, which is, on detail F111. It shows that you cannot install this on a post-tension slab. So I read it. And I said, okay, well, first of all, because dynamic movement of a post-tension slab have proven problematic for a directly adhering natural stone to, which is correct. If you directly adhere natural stone to a post-tension
right.
slab, you're going to see cracks, right? F111
yep.
is the only method of installation, natural stone tile over post-tension slab on ground or above. Okay. So when you read that short sentence that's in that section of the book, which is located on page 30, if anybody wants to fact check me, it helps you to go, okay, well, now how do I dig into it and look at it? So I would go over to page 68, which is F111-21, because that's the one we're building off of, and you look at it very carefully. And when you look at it very carefully, it shows this floated slab with the reinforced wire, okay? And you have to think before anything, when you get to this point, why is this the method? Because you know many tile installers have not done this method or installed on
right.
this method, particular method, and they've bonded directly to a concrete slab, which is incorrect. There is a reason why you install this particular method over a slab, dynamic movement.
Right.
So you have a standard of ANSI 118.12A, and ANSI 118.12B, okay, under your anti-fracture membranes. The B is for dynamic movement, which means it creates an indirect bond. So if that membrane is on that substrate, the slab, you can install your tile directly on top of the membrane because there is an elongation within the membrane that allows the substrate to move but not telegraph that crack all the way through to the top surface.
Exactly. Well, you know, and you bring up an interesting point. That... Now, finish your thought.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
No, I was gonna say that, you know, there are circumstances like, you know, here in where I am in Florida, a lot of theme parks. And the reason I say theme parks is because there's some very unique installation issues when it comes to building some of these attractions and buildings that they use tile. And I'm not just talking hotels. I'm talking weird type things. And actually, we ran into one in the was it the Encore with the steam showers? So the example you give is, you know, you really have to delve into these guidelines and standards and kind of read them. Don't just take the first paragraph and say, oh, you can't use this one, or this is the right one to use. You know, you've got to delve into it. So you're absolutely right.
Yeah, that secondary part to that story was this installer had a height issue in this area where they were doing the installation. So he's like, I don't know how I'm going to be able to install it per this detail and without cutting all these doors. And I said, you can install directly on top of our membrane because it meets the high performance standard. And so he says, yeah, but the TCNA manual. I said, yes, the TCNA manual. This goes back to your other question. I said, TCNA manual outlines that, but also look at where the cleavage membrane is located on underneath this installation. It's this basically the cleavage membrane and mortar is taking the place of what you would have as an anti-fracture membrane. So if I eliminate the cleavage membrane and the reinforced mortar bed and I install an indirect bonded high performance sheet membrane that has dynamic movement, that can take dynamic movement, I now have made it much more thinner installation and having the same performances, and the manufacturer then takes on the responsibility with their warranty because they'll ultimately look at it and say, yes, you can do that.
Right.
So there's multiple things that people have to look at and understand as they look at any installation. Installing next to you had a major theme park. It has a roller coaster go over, and they have an area where they have the people walking through the line, and it goes over this tile section. It looks really beautiful. It looks like a little carnival, okay? And I thought about this when I was at this major theme park, and I'm walking through it. I'm like, this tile looks fantastic, because the designers and the installers took into consideration the ongoing and constant vibration of the tracks above, and where they land in the ground, the distance from those tracks to that actual slab, which was poured separately, and also the insulation on that surface and how they use the movement joints. It was genius because then, you know, they don't have to continually come back and repair these things because, you know, the movement has made it crack. It's very, very wisely done. And I encourage anybody, whenever you're in an area where you're seeing these unique installations, to look at that particular scenario.
You know, going back to the very beginning of what we were talking about with, you know, the presentations and teaching you do to architects, how would you recommend an installer approach an architect that's giving them, how do I say this and be nice about it, incorrect or questionable specifications?
So you want to know what I did?
Yes. I know what you did. Tell the audience what you did.
Yeah. So going back, this is, it goes back many years, but the first really significant one was in 2004. And we met in 06, I believe it was 06 when we did that class, a really long class, but in 04, I reviewed a document, and the document for the showers in this particular hotel was wrong, egregiously incorrect. And so I, before I went to the director of our, of the architectural department, I did my homework. I knew in my heart of hearts that this was incorrect. I had to make sure that all my homework was done before I approached this individual.
Right.
When they say you're only as good as your last job, it's true. You're only as good as how you're going to present it. And pride has nothing to do with it. They don't care how long you've been doing this in the industry. They don't care what you think you know, okay?
Right.
It has everything to do with the larger picture. And so going into it, it was the shower pan detail. There were multiple things. There was no pre-pitching. There was no way of addressing how the membrane attached to the drain. There was no continuous where the detail was from the wall to the pan. So I redrew the entire thing. And that was one of the biggest things that has been a very good ally. You know, I like to draw mine, is that I actually redid the detail. Now, I backed up that detail with the TCNA manual, not anybody else's information, but I backed it up with a standard in our TCNA manual. And so when I approached the doorkeeper to the director of architecture at Wynn, I approached him with it, and I said, hey, listen, can you please come over here and review this drawing with me? And he says, sure. So he goes and he reviews the drawing with me. And I said, I see this, and this incorrect on our drawings. And his exact words to me were, are you sure? Because, you know, when he goes into the other room, if you're going to make yourself look like a, you know, an idiot, you got to make sure it's clear. So
right.
It goes down to detail B421. And B421 in the book shows a shower detail, solid backer board, bonded waterproofing membrane, and then so what I did is I redrew it. I showed him exactly what it should look like, and I asked him. I said, you know, we have 3,500 keys. You know, 3,500 rooms that you're going to be dealing with. You cannot afford to have one leak,
right?
Because in a hospitality scenario, it's not one room. It's actually factually 9 rooms, because whenever you're doing jackhammering everything, because of noise, you have to take out all the rooms around that one room.
Right.
So they never wanted to do that. So as I looked through it and I showed them the detail, how it was correct, all the detail was changed. And to date, not one shower has been replaced.
Wow.
So make sure, you know, don't go in with it saying, I want this to be changed. Go into it saying, we can't afford not to change it. Because when you look at these details the way that we do, you'll have your time. You'll have your time in the industry. You'll have your time in the glory, you know, in the life. But at that time, don't think about that. Just get the job done.
Yep.
And it's really important that you do that, because when pride gets in the way, you're just going to fall on your face. And you could be as right, you can be as right trained, man. But if it's the way you approach it,
yep.
if you're not approaching it correctly, they will not listen to you. I don't care who it is. You can know these architects for multiple years. They will just see you as a person that's objecting or trying to detour their project. So be very cautious of how you do it. But if you bring it to them in a very humble manner that says, listen, I'm looking at this detail, and sometimes you got to be very strategic in how you approach it. You don't do this in a construction meeting when you have everybody else there and put them on blast. This is a sidebar. This is a complete sidebar meeting to the architect to help them save face. And that's the way you should approach it. You should never do this in front of everybody and trying to embarrass them to make you look
right.
better. It'll just only make you look worse, and you'll never be used again. So you're better off taking it on the side and say, listen, I have this here. I want to help you to make a successful project. This is what we should be building off of. And they more than likely will accept it.
When would, let's complicate that a little bit, which I like to do.
It's you, Fred. I wouldn't expect anything less.
When would you document that? Would you document that in an email? Would you document that in a letter, a change order, or would you document it, I guess I should ask?
So depending on the situation and how you want to grow with that architect, and if it's before the install and it's not gonna affect you per se as far as cost, because what we were proposing did accrue a cost, but it was offset by the time that was saved by putting a sheet membrane other than a liquid. So there was an offset in cost, which ended up, becoming a non-issue. But if you can look at it, and I say beyond the detail, give them an understanding of how much it's going to save time and the money for the project, and just say, hey, you make the change, I don't want any credit for it, just make it happen. And he says, that's awesome, thank you for your help, blah, 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 blah. You know, that's okay. Now, if you see it and it's going to have a cost, you have to document it. And documenting would be when you're with them and you show them a detail, you can just say, listen, let's make this a confirming RFI. You sign it, they sign it, they take a picture of it, and they document it as well, right, and you send it to them via email. Now you have a confirming request for information, and put it through either an RFI or submittal process. So they actually have it, documenting and changing in particular, but you have to have all the information on that document so that it's properly documented, because what was happening on some design builds that you'll see is that you'll have these changes start coming through when the building is being done. I don't know if you remember that in Encore.
Yep, I do.
When we were doing that build, they said, oh, okay, we have a smart idea. We're going to change the color, because you'll see the revisions on the side, and they have to make sure they're operating off they're building off the right revision. So they started to change the color of the documents. We went through the forests of Lebanon and tore down all the trees and then colored them. we went through so much paper on that job. It was insane. But they had a white copy, then they had a green copy, they had a blue copy, they had a pink copy, they had a yellow copy. You would see these colors changing as you would go, because at a glance, if you're out in the field and they didn't have the right color copy of the plans, you could say right away, hey, you're not building off the right set of plans.
Right.
And it drove them crazy, but it was a way of us being able to see it very quickly that they weren't operating off the right plans.
Mm-hmm. Hey, let's take a quick break for pay the bills here, and then it's only going to be a minute, and then we'll come right back after this.
Let's do it.
Thank you, Tough Skin, one of our gold sponsors. Marble etches and stains, Tough Skin guarantees it will not. Tough Skin provides a unique product and installation service anywhere in the USA with their proprietary stone laminate products. They protect marble countertops with an acid, oil, and waterproof guarantee. That's right, it's now possible to install marble, onyx, and travertine countertops without the worry of etching and staining from common household items like wine, lemon, coffee, or other acidic foods. People have been trying to figure this out for thousands of years, and Tough Skin Surface Protection has done it. Available in gloss and satin to match the countertop finish. Visit them online at toughskinprotection.com. That's TUFFskinprotection.com to learn more. All right, we're back. And let me give the number out one more time if you're listening live, 323-870-3968. We're going to wrap things up here in a few minutes. So if you're going to call in, I would do it now, 323-870-3968. All right, James, so any last-minute advice or comments about this, about the handbook?
Well, you know, my favorite page, you know it, what it is, page 21 on all the membranes. You know, be smarter than most of those salespeople that come talk to you, because I've heard it multiple times where they'll sell you a product and it has nothing to do with what it does. So the best way to do it, if you're using the manual, and you saw me do this in the class, and everybody was like, what?
What?
The membrane section, yeah, the membrane section in the TCNA manual defines what each one of these products are supposed to do. A cleavage membrane, a vapor retarder, a waterproofing membrane, low perm waterproofing membrane, crack isolation membrane, uncoupling membrane, sound isolation membranes. They're all defined here on page 21 and 22. And if somebody says that one product can do another product's ability, they have to be tested through these ANSI standards, ANSI 118.10, 118.12, ANSI A108.02, and there's all these different things. Now, if the product does not test underneath that criteria, which you can look and see which one I'm talking about, just to give it a little teaser, it's the last paragraph on page 21, second sentence. Is that pretty good?
Yeah, that's good.
You can see how they can't call themselves something else. So just be very aware when you're looking at things and you're understanding it. And if somebody says, well, I have characteristics of this, and you go, characteristics. That doesn't hold weight in the court of law. Did you get tested to a certain standard or not? So
right.
My brother's calling me at all times, but you know, you want to make sure that you have them tested at that standard to make sure that it works properly.
Right. Great.
That's my closing thought.
All right. Well, wonderful. I just want to mention to everybody that give myself a plug here that James, who's been on the show several times, also is one of my instructors out there at the inspection and troubleshooting class out in Vegas that I do every year. So if you want to meet him, come out next year. we'll have another.
When is it? When is it, Fred?
It's February 6th through the 10th. Hopefully you're there.
Got to clear my calendar.
Yeah. Stop traveling so damn much.
I know.
Where are you today? You in Philadelphia today?
I'm in Philadelphia today. I did a couple double class with a particular architect out here, and a lot of great questions came out of that. One of them about should I use drywall in a wet area?
Oh, God.
And it was funny because he was adamant about using a cement board in a wet area, which I said, that's fine. And the contractor had come to him with a certified letter right to him saying, no, we don't want to use it. It's too heavy to haul the stuff up, and we want to use another product. And so I'll give you an idea, and I want to hear how you're going to answer it as a closing thought so you can make it quick, okay?
Sure.
The wall is 10 feet high by about 12 feet wide in a pantry area of an office building. He calls out for some cementitious board in his plans to be anchored to the structural wall and the tile be applied to that. The tile installer says no, they want to use a foam-based board on the surface of it to get an acceptable substrate and put the tile directly to that. Okay, they're not screwing through it or anything. They're going to put a foam board on a brick wall, basically.
First of all, that's against code.
Okay,
that's number one. Number two,
I asked, what is code?
Great.
That's my first question to him. And
I was worried about deflection. You know, an area that big, you have an issue with deflection. And I'd want to address that, too. So, you know, the two of the things I could think off the top of my head, that put me on the spot.
And the third, I said, how much does that tile weigh per square foot?
Yep.
And so he says, well, and I said, about 3 to 4 pounds. Yeah. I said, no, do simple math on your square footage of the wall. And tell me if that foam board can take the sheer strength of that weight pulling on it.
Yep.
And then ask the contractor if he's comfortable enough by taking the liability on that wall collapsing on the people below.
Yeah, exactly.
And he goes, well, that made it easy.
Yeah, that gets their eyes open, right? It's like, wow.
Yeah. So, yeah, we deal with this all the time, but sometimes it's taking it from the most simplest part of it, because I think the contractor came from a good place thinking, like, man, I got to haul all this stuff up there, but not really thinking about the liability and the legalities that would come after that fails. Because we look at it, and our brain does this immediate ticking of the years that go by, what could happen, what's going to happen, how much sun's going to touch it. All these kind of things come through it. And then you end up with that solution. But, it's pretty serious.
Wow.
So.
Right.
But,
well, buddy, that was some great information. Hope everybody enjoyed it. Again, James Medina with Noble. You can look him up. You want to give out your any of your information? Noble website, maybe?
Yeah, if you want. Sure, if you guys want to contact me directly, or if you want to look at material on www.noblecompany.com, you can see our products and everything that we make with more sheet membranes, and now Noble Company actually makes a liquid membrane. And so I got to be nice, but I also can tell you that it is one of the only liquid waterproofing membranes on the market that has a low perm rating of 0.3. So phenomenal products and lines. They also make the drains, so they address the drain connection points in the most robust and best way. But also my contact information is, you can call me, 702-540-6025. That's 702-540-6025. Or you can email me directly at james@noblecompany.com. That's james@noblecompany.com. And I get back with everybody, and if you have any questions at all. And Noble Company is really involved with multiple tiers in the industry. Both Dean and I have also taught the NKBS, the National Kitchen and Bath Association. We did this thing nationally, teaching architects and designers across the United States. We're also part of the AIA, the NTCA, and the CIS. And so we have all these acronyms behind us. Yeah, so we're fully engulfed and involved. So, you know, if you guys have any questions, please feel free to contact us at any time. We appreciate
it. I appreciate it, James. I want to give you a call after this. I got some news I want to tell you that I got today.
Fantastic.
So I
hope you're not pregnant.
No, I'm not. Neither is anybody else that I know. But I'll give you a call in a minute.
All right. Sounds good.
All right.
Talk
thanks,
to you later.
Buddy.
Thanks, Fred.
Sounds good. All right, folks. That's all for this week. Thanks for listening. Until next time, keep setting those tiles, polishing that stone, and fabricating those tops. Later, my friends.
Ready to take your skills to the next level? Visit GetTrainedToday.com to learn about e-learning and hands-on courses offered by the Surfaces Learning Institute. Learn from industry experts the skills needed to start offering stone and tile restoration, or take your existing skills to the next level quickly and with a solid foundation. More advanced courses include commercial maintenance, inspection and troubleshooting, historic property preservation, how to become an expert witness, and more. Training offered at the Institute goes well beyond essential restoration and maintenance skills training to include a variety of other relevant topics for growing your business and leveraging your skills. For example, essential marketing or how to become an expert witness. All training is reinforced with resources and tremendous support to help you hit the ground running with confidence. Visit GetTrainedToday.com to learn more.